Thank you, Glenn. Photosynthesis is one of the principal physiological processes underpinning dry matter production, and as such is one of the major factors that's involved in ultimate yield determinations. Photosynthesis is a multi-step, highly complex process with many points of regulation along the way. This morning I'm going to be talking about 3 points of regulation of the process. The level of 2 macronutrients, nitrogen and potassium, and also the role that water stress plays in regulating photosynthesis. I've singled out these 3 of many points because these are areas that I've done some research and have a comfort level to talk about with you. As I said, there are many factors that can come into play in regulating photosynthesis. Some others are light levels, temperature, source-link relations, as Brian's mentioned earlier. In terms of the nutrient levels, as I said, we're going to be talking about nitrogen and potassium. And in terms of water stress, we're going to be looking at stomatal effects, non-stomatal effects, and a phenomenon known as the afternoon hysteresis, which Jack kind of talked about early on, but not a whole lot of attention is paid to that, and that's the decline in photosynthesis that occurs in the afternoon as opposed to what's rate that you measure in the morning, even though you're measuring them at similar light intensities. And we're going to talk about some of the possible reasons that can come into play to cause that phenomenon. First, focusing in on the nitrogen effect, this is some data from John Reagan's lab, and you can see that plants that were grown under high rates of nitrogen fertilities had a greater leaf photosynthetic rate or carbon assimilation rate relative to those that were grown under the lower nitrogen fertility regimes. Now, we also reported similar curves for stomal conductance in response to nitrogen fertility, with the plants having higher nitrogen fertility having higher rates of stomal conductance. Now, this similarity in symptoms that he observed between nitrogen-deficient plants and plants that were exposed to water stress led him to describe it as a nitrogen stress syndrome, and he broke that down into 3 parts. One, he mentioned that you have a decreased leaf photosynthesis and also a decreased stomal conductance for plants that are exposed to a nitrogen stress. Also, nitrogen deficient plants have decreased hydraulic conductance, which is the flow of water through the xylem tissue, and that leads to a reduction in leaf expansion and growth, and also to an accumulation of carbohydrates in the leaf tissue prior to flowering. Now, these carbohydrates are later remobilized during the bowl filling period. Also, he described that nitrogen deficient plants have increased stomal sensitivity to moisture stress, so such that they close their stomates at a higher water potential rather than optimally fertilized plants here. And this actually conveys a degree of drought tolerance to nitrogen deficient plants, but it's just a small amount, so it's nothing to get all overly carried away about. This is some work from my lab that we published recently, and here we're showing the effect that varying nitrogen fertility levels can have on our leaf chlorophyll concentration. And you can see going from our untreated, unfertilized plots up to our high rate of nitrogen fertility, which is 112 kilograms per hectare, we increase leaf chlorophyll concentration by approximately 25%, you know, and this is no shock in lieu of the fact that nitrogen is a component of the chlorophyll molecule. Same study. This instance, we're looking at the chlorophyll fluorescence variable maximum ratio, which is an estimate of the maximum photosystem II quantum efficiency. Here, 3 out of the 4 years going from our unfertilized to our high rate of fertility, we increased the variable to maximum ratio approximately 2%. Now, I present this data just to kind of illustrate the role that the level of leaf nitrogen can play in regulating some of the light reaction processes of photosynthesis. This study here is one that we did a few years ago, and with this we were trying to investigate why canopy photosynthesis started to decline right at the period of time when the plants would normally be having their greatest demand for photoassimilates, which would be around cutout. And we approached this study by creating canopies of varying developmental stages using different planting dates. We planted in late April and in late May, and we measured leaf photosynthesis and other physiological traits on the same day. And what we found was that our leaves from our older canopy were photosynthesizing at a lower level and had a reduced level of total soluble leaf proteins relative to our younger canopies. Chlorophyll concentration wasn't impacted at this particular time because Rubisco is such a large percentage of the overall soluble leaf protein. We also saw a decreased level of Rubisco activity in our leaves from our older canopies. And we interpreted this data to conclude that as our canopies were developing a boll load of sufficient size that we were having to remobilize nitrogen out of the leaf tissue to first as protein and then later as chlorophyll to feed this developing boll demand from our developing boll load. I'm presenting this data just to kind of show how the level of leaf nitrogen that's in the leaf can also regulate some of the dark reaction processes of photosynthesis. So nitrogen can impact both light and dark reactions of photosynthesis. And just to kind of sum up some of our nitrogen deficiency effects, most of you guys will know this. You've got slower growth, smaller leaves and reduced leaf area index, greater root to shoot ratios, increased earliness or an earlier cutout, increased fruit shedding, and as I mentioned earlier, increased drought resistance, although that's a minor aspect in my opinion. Shifting next to potassium and how it affects photosynthesis. The most prominent effect that you're going to see from a potassium deficiency is a reduction in the overall leaf of plant stature. In this study from ours, we found that our potassium deficient plants, the ones that we did not fertilize, they had about a 2% reduction in overall plant height, about a 12% reduction in the leaf area index, but the specific leaf weight of these leaves from our potassium deficient plants was increased approximately 14%. As you might suspect, in lieu of this reduction in the overall leaf area index from a potassium deficient canopy, it's also intercepting less of the incoming solar radiation than the potassium fertilized canopy. This is some work from Owen Guatney and Don Howard in Jackson, Tennessee. In this particular study, the plants that were fertilized with potassium were actually probably intercepting about 12% more of the incoming sunlight than the potassium deficient canopies. Potassium also plays a role in stomal conductance. The influx of potassium ions into the guard cells of the stomata lowers the osmotic potential and causes water to move into the guard cells. This causes them to elongate and forces the stomates open. So an insufficient level of leaf potassium, you're going to end up with a decreased stomal conductance. Not only is the stomal conductance diminished by a potassium deficiency, but also overall photosynthesis is reduced in response to a potassium deficiency. Some work by Craig Bednarz showed that during the early onset of a potassium deficiency, it's the stomatal conductance that's depressing photosynthesis for the most part. But as that potassium deficiency becomes more pronounced and much stronger, that the non-stomatal factors kick in and are playing the predominant role in regulating, in the down-regulation of the photosynthesis. Not only is photosynthesis depressed by potassium deficiency, but some work at the University of Georgia done by Doyle Ashley has shown that the translocation of that photosynthesis out of the leaf material is restricted in potassium-deficient plants. And this restriction of the translocation leads to an accumulation of carbohydrates in the leaf material for the potassium-deficient plants. This is some work out of my lab back during the late 90s, and we showed that potassium-deficient plants had an increased level of leaf glucose concentration throughout the growing season. Early on in the growing season, the potassium-deficient plants had about 100% more leaf glucose, and that diminished later in the growing season to about 50%. Okay, let's go back. Backspace. Others have shown that the hexose sugars have tended to increase in response to a potassium deficiency. Not so much sucrose, however, in other crops, other researchers have shown that sucrose has increased in the leaf material in response to a potassium deficiency. Okay, I knew I was putting people to sleep. I didn't realize I was putting the projector to sleep. Sum up our potassium deficiency, you're getting a smaller plant, a smaller canopy that's intercepting less incoming sunlight. Not only is it intercepting less incoming sunlight, it's utilizing that sunlight less efficiently because of a reduced leaf photosynthesis. Further complicating things is you've got a restriction on the translocation of that photosynthesis out of the leaf material. So you've got a reduced overall pool of photoassimilates available to support reproductive growth, and that leads to our yield reductions and our reductions in fiber quality in our potassium deficient plants. Moving next to water stress and how it can impact photosynthesis. This is some work from Dan Krieg's lab here, and he's shown that both photosynthesis and translocation of the photoassimilates out of the leaf material are reduced as water stress becomes more severe or as our leaf water potential becomes more negative. Photosynthesis is impacted both through stomatal and non-stomatal factors. The stomates certainly play a role in regulating photosynthesis in response to water stress, but reports in the literature, this is extremely inconsistent, the stomatal response across the many studies. So it's difficult to really pinpoint the contribution that stomatal conductance plays in regulating photosynthesis in response to water stress. I think part of the problem is the fact that we're comparing studies with potted plants in greenhouses and growth chambers and also field studies here. With our potted plants, you're growing the plants under a restricted root growth here just because of the combined volume of the container that you're growing them in. But in almost all those studies, we're seeing reduced stomatal conductance as our water stress becomes more severe. With our field plants, where there's less restriction on the root growth, stomatal conductance had been reported to either be unaffected or reduced under water stress. Mesophyll conductance was almost always reported to be reduced under the water stress conditions. Some work done at Texas A&M up in Temple, Texas by Tom Barrick's group along with Kyle Farber or Favor. They reported that the stomal conductance was the predominant factor controlling photosynthesis when the water stress was considered to be severe water stress. Non-stemal aspects also come into play here. Again, there's some inconsistent results in the literature with that as well. Two of the more relatively consistent responses to water stress for our non-stemal are decreased electron flow through photosystem 2, decreased carboxylation efficiency, and again, the group at Temple, Texas has reported that under mild water stress that the non-stemal factors were the principal regulatory factors over photosynthesis. And quickly summing up some of our water stress impacts, we have smaller plants with less leaf area, reduced leaf photosynthesis, reduced photoassimilate translocation, earlier cutouts, lower yields, and some fiber quality reductions. Next, we're going to look at the afternoon hysteresis phenomenon, and this is from some work that I did, again, back during the 90s. Here we looked at leaves from both dry land and irrigated plants, and we measured the same leaf in the morning and in the afternoon. And you can see that both under dry land and irrigated conditions that our photosynthesis in the afternoon is reduced relative to that what we had in the morning. But this response is much more pronounced for our drought-stressed plants rather than it is for our irrigated plants. In fact, we're going from a situation where we're measuring in the morning where our dry land plants actually had a higher leaf photosynthesis in the morning. And we speculate that this is most likely due to an increased concentration of the photosynthetic apparatus in the drought stress leaves per unit leaf area, as shown by we tend to have higher specific leaf weights and higher chlorophyll concentrations in our drought stress leaves rather than our irrigated. But this crashes in the afternoon such that our dry land leaves actually have about a 6% less leaf photosynthesis than did our irrigated plants. So this afternoon hysteresis is a real phenomenon, and it's more pronounced in our drought stress plants relative to our irrigated plants. And I think that because we aren't photosynthesizing at our most efficient levels here in the afternoon, this may give us an opportunity to study and possibly improve it if we can first understand what's going on to cause this. And a number of different possibilities have been proposed related to cause this particular phenomenon. One is afternoon stemal closure of the leaves due to an increasing leaf-to-air vapor pressure deficit. Another one is the feedback inhibition from carbohydrate buildup that Jack mentioned earlier. A third one is just higher temperatures going on in the afternoon that may move that photosynthesis outside the optimal range. Fourth, photoinhibition or a down regulation in the overall photosynthetic apparatus in response to high light intensities that can occur around solar noon. I've seen that proposed. Finally, maybe transient moisture stress. You know, any or all of these things can be in play here, and the level of their contribution probably varies over time. I think it's a pretty complex phenomenon to try to describe. So to try to conclude up everything, photosynthesis is a highly complex process with multiple points of regulation along the way. We talked about some of them, the nutrients, water, light, even insect feeding can impact our photosynthesis, source-sink relations. All of these things come into play. They interact with one another, and they probably change over time and space. But I think that gives us some opportunities to continue to conduct research and possibly help provide some answers and opportunities from others. And at that, I'll conclude my talk.
Thanks, Joe.